Okay, everybody, welcome to the Breakfast Club. This is Breakfast Club episode number 37. I think I started saying the episode number like two episodes ago. I don't know why it took me that long to start doing it, but yeah, episode 37. I'm Freest, and I'm here with the Stupendium.
Hello! That's me.
That's you! The Stupendium, in case you don't know, is just a random guy off the street. And yeah.
it was warm inside. He invited me in.
It's been I've noticed the weather has been very British outside today. That's actually
it's
true.
Been very American here. It's been really warm.
It's actually been raining all day here. So
we're having a mini heat wave. What's going on?
Kind of
weather back.
Just in case there's like a single person on Earth left who doesn't know who you are, why don't you introduce yourself? Just kind of say like what you know, what you're all about.
There's a fair few out there, I'd say. Hello, I'm the Stupendium. Greg, either work. Some people call me Stupes. I do nerdcore songs that are very heavily inspired by sort of musical theatre and rap in equal measure. I'm like a low cost nerdy Hamilton, and. I do weird songs about video games.
That seems like a pretty apt description. You forgot to mention that you do extremely good songs about video games.
I do those too, sometimes.
all the time. We're here on the what is actually the season ender of the Breakfast Club. So I say every week that it's a special episode, and it always is, and this is also a special episode, but it's also a season ender, so, you know, I guess you have that prestige.
Well, see, when I volunteered for this, I wasn't aware I was going to be the season finale, and now suddenly there's an awful lot more pressure to be entertaining, you know, but I'll do my best.
I appreciate the effort. I'm sure it will not take much effort. Here's something I wanted to say up top. Happy Pride Month, both to you and to everyone in chat. It's now
happy
June
Pride
2nd,
Month, everybody.
And pure vibin 2 days into the Ooh. Month. If anyone doesn't know, it is you're required to be gay this month. Things mm-hmm. will go back to normal at the end of the month, but
yeah. Bonus points if you act on it, but if you at least think a lot of gay stuff, that you'll get by.
Yeah, it's very much like that one clip from whichever ASDF movie where the guy presses the button and just goes, I'm gay now. It's like that.
Yeah.
That's how it goes.
Yeah, the 30-day timer has started ticking down so you can be straight again if you so desire at the end of the month.
Think of it as a free trial. Think of it as a demo, and you can upgrade to a full license at the end of the month.
Yeah, you're welcome for the free trial.
I feel like if, and that's not a competition, but I feel like if sexuality was kind of like a software, I feel like being pan is kind of like it's the premium, like you've unlocked everything.
Yeah, I've got the full package. Yeah, yeah. Like people who are just gay or bi, every month they get the little WinRAR style pop up saying, it's expired. We'll let you keep using it, but would you please register for the foot? And they just keep going.
Yeah. I wonder who will be the first to crack and buy WinRAR of, because I don't think anybody that I know has done it. I'm sure somebody has done it, but I mean among the people that I know. Have you ever bought WinRAR?
No, heavens no. I mean, I made an oath a few years back when I, you know, started working self-employed to start buying all my software legit, because I think everyone could admit to of pirating software in their early days of their learning how to use software. But WinRAR's the one. Like, there's never been a need. It just works without buying it, so why would anyone buy it?
It just works.
It works.
Yeah, I made a similar... like decision a few months. I think it was right around the time when I got Ableton, because I was like, you know what, I'm finally putting in the investment to get Ableton, which is like a sizable chunk of change, even with like at the time I had the student discount. And I was like, you know, I'll get plugins. You know, obviously I'm getting like a mic upgrade and everything. That was like a few months later, but I was like, I'm actually gonna just like start building stuff. But then I was like, should I? ever in my life pay for an Adobe product. No. No, it is always ethical to pirate Adobe products. To be fair, so far I haven't had to, because I'm still on my student account.
I feel called out as an Adobe customer.
Listen,
I bleed After Effects if you cut me.
Listen, it is far easier, and from a business perspective, it makes a lot more sense to just pay for Adobe. However, I feel like I would not be I would not be standing by my anti-capitalist sort of leftist beliefs wholeheartedly, what I preach day in and day out. Not really, but what I do hold to, if I didn't repeat, that it is always ethical to pirate Adobe products. I mean, run up the flag, run up the Jolly Roger, you know, if you've got to. But if you don't have to, hey, I mean, there's the other option, which is to simply engage in commerce the way that it's set up, which is a vastly better business decision.
Yeah. I mean, business and morality don't really go hand in hand, as is the topic of about 70% of my catalog of songs. So, yeah, you've got to pick one or the other.
Yeah. I don't know if this is fortunate or unfortunate, but like I've never learned, you know, After Effects or really anything except maybe Photoshop enough to necessitate having to rely on the Adobe product. I feel like with Photoshop, right, I've got options, but
yeah.
Other than that, like I do my video editing in DaVinci Resolve, which is good enough. I actually do have Vegas, but I found out that Resolve crashes a little less frequently. a little.
I started learning in Adobe as a teenager, and I've never used anything else since. I know Adobe, and that is, I know the whole Adobe pipeline. I can do your premieres, your After Effects, your Auditions, I even a little bit of Dreamweaver now and then. But
every time I hear Dreamweaver, I don't know if you've ever seen an old program. I'm 60 years old. an old show called Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
I am very aware of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place.
I thought if anyone
you
was,
buddies, weren't you?
If any, yeah, you were buddies. I'd say that so often. Okay, so I figured if anybody knew Dark Place, it would be you, because it seems to be in that sort of like Black Books-ish universe. But that's one of my favorite shows ever.
The celebrity I get compared to the most worryingly frequently is Matt Berry.
Okay, I mean, that to me is a massive compliment, because Matt Berry is one of my favorite people in the world. I love him in the show. I love my actual, like, the person I am obsessed with is Richard Iowati.
He's great.
And he always plays these just like these niche roles. And especially like his character on Dark Place is just incredible. But what was my point with this? Oh, yeah. So when I hear Dreamweaver, I always think of like the intro. Because I'm pretty sure he says it in the intro. He's like, author, visionary, Dreamweaver, plus
yes,
actor.
He does.
Plus
that,
actor.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh. For anyone who hasn't seen Garth Marenghi's Dark Place, I think, at least in the US, like all of it is on YouTube. And it is vastly worth watching. It was made a lot more recently than you would think by watching it.
Yeah. It's a period piece. It's a modern show made to look like a show that was made in the sort of late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah, it's great. It's hilarious. I would maybe call it a cult classic. I don't know if that's...
I guess if I were to say that, yeah.
Quite the right term, but...
I think it features a cult in at least one episode, so...
It's definitely, yeah. But it just has some of the best... Like, I don't know, I also just really like actual stuff that was made that is very much like Dark Place. Sort of that just cheesy, like, low-budget, like, B-movie horror. Because I don't really like horror proper, but I really like B-movie horror and, like, old creature features. Especially from, like, the 50s.
Yeah, those are fun. I've not seen many, but they are. When I've seen them, I've enjoyed them. I want to see more.
I think my favorite is The Killer Shrews, which is this 50s movie where these these folks get stranded on an island, and there are these giant mutant shrews, and there's like this whole thing where they have to like, they're like sneaking around like underneath a big like a 50 gallon drum or something, and just their legs are sticking out. It's so, it's great. It's
incredible.
It's the jankiest thing you could ever hope to see. So here's me being an interviewer with written down questions for a second.
Oh, exciting.
So now I'm only starting with basic questions like this because you said you hadn't really, you know, done one of these before.
Sure.
So I wanted to start with the name Stupendium. Is that, so it's, your like bios places usually say Stupendium, a compendium of the stupendously stupid. Is that like kind of in totality what that name came, what that name means, like why you came up with it? I mean, or was it like you came up with the word and then you're like, you need it to mean something? What was kind of the, what's the order there?
There is a storied history of the name Stupendium. So it was, originally it was the name of a comic that I wanted to make and never made. And that comic only came into existence because I used to sell, long, long ago now, I used to sell my artwork at conventions. I used to go out to comic conventions and sell my art. And it was a mix of original stuff and fan art of things. And then one year, suddenly the convention, the big one that I attended a lot, suddenly said, no more fan art. You can't do that anymore. You can only be here if you have an original comic. And I was like, oh, I don't have an original comic. I just sell sort of artwork and posters of characters. So I've got 2 months to make a comic. So I started putting together a comic and I came up with this name of Stupendium, which was a compendium of the stupendously stupid. And it was sort of a series of little one-strip, very bad pun-based comics that I started making. But I made enough to sell at like one convention. Nobody bought any. And I never really did anything with it again for a while. Then a year or so later, I thought, well, I've got a lot of ideas for these comics I never made. Maybe I'll make animations of them because I want to start doing more animation in my spare time. So I made the YouTube channel to start animating these little comic ideas I had. But I never did that either. And then a couple of years later, I still had the channel with the name and I just started uploading other stuff to it. And I sort of ended up stuck with the name. So it was originally the name of a webcomic that never existed.
So if you hadn't come up with the name Stupendium, what do you think you would be known as now? What do you think this...
Gosh, I honestly don't know. I mean, I played Second Life when I was a teenager for like 3 months, and the name I had in Second Life just became my internet handle for years after that, just because it was convenient to use. It'd probably be something like that. I think Fiero Heckroth was the web handle that I used to use like in my late teens. It probably would have been something dumb, some variation on that.
Do you think that would have had kind of the same selling power?
No.
It's interesting because it sounds like Stupendium was never meant to be a name like, it was never meant to be a name for you. It was meant to be a name for a thing that you made.
A thing, yes. Well, it's got a V on the beginning, and now it feels awkward.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Although you've got, you've got artists like Schaefer the Dark Lord or Kermit the Frog, so there's precedent.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
But that's interesting because then, like you were saying at the beginning, like, people will call you Stoops or Stupendium. Does anyone ever address you as the Stupendium with the V?
People who haven't spoken to me before, new followers online and stuff, when they sort of speak to me for the first time, they tend to call me the Stupendium. And it always feels awkward because it does sound like the name of an object, like a book. The original logo for the Stupendium was a big leather-bound book with the swirly S that I have in my logo on the front. So it was always supposed to be the name for a thing, not a person. And now I'm the thing, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my... I'm a little fortunate, a little unfortunate in that my, handle is Freest, which is a nothing word. It doesn't mean anything. But it was a nickname based on my old artist name that I did choose that was made of two words. But it's just nobody could say my old name properly. And so then my friends were like, oh, well, let's just make fun of that by calling him Freest and spelling it differently. And now...
Right.
People see my name, like reactors and stuff, and they're like, all right, we got one by Freesed. And I'm like, oh boy, it's this again. Like in 3 years, my name's going to be Freeset, and it's going to be spelled differently. As well.
When I first read your name, it Freest was immediately the pronunciation that came to my mind.
I think linguistically, it makes sense, you know. But
yeah,
not everybody, you know, sort of thinks in terms of linguistics, and I didn't account for that.
No, true.
But I had the name Freest for a good while before I started my current channel. It was just a nickname of my old name, and I don't know why I would ever change it, but maybe if I see I over the years I've started a number of comics, and I've never put them anywhere, but when I was a kid, I always wanted to be a cartoonist. Biggest inspiration I've ever had is Bill Watterson.
Oh yeah.
But I also read like every single Peanuts comic, so Charles Schulz was pretty big as well, and then Gary Larson, of course, just all the greats, really, all the hits. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. So this is a fun mini game. If my artist name were based on a comic that I started and then never did anything with or haven't done anything with yet, I would be called Damdish. That's not bad.
I mean, that's not a bad name for a rapper or performer. Damdish. I like that.
No, that's not bad at all. It's the premise of the comic is it's this ghost who's kind of floating through purgatory, thinking about you know, big life questions. But it's also kind of funny, at least in theory. big laugh getter purgatory.
A lot of humor there. A lot of humor to be found.
So here's another. I should check chat because I like to do that since we do these live. Schwabri's been in here. Schwabri's making fun of me calling Kermit the Frog an artist. How dare you, Schwabri? Kermit has more hit records than you ever will.
Kermit is not an artist. He is an artiste.
Schwabri coming in with, I like to pronounce the C and Freest as a hard K. I'll hit you with this hard K. I think that might be a bar. Shabri in chat now just says that's crazy. Crazy. Here's the next thing that I wanted to ask about.
Right.
I'm drinking water constantly. My throat is a desert.
Is that the question, or?
Yes, that's the question. So I've been drinking a lot of water, and my throat is a desert. Thoughts?
it's a shame that the water isn't working for you. Have more water, I guess, is all I can recommend.
Okay, all right. I'll try and find an even more liquid water.
Maybe you're not drinking water. Maybe the water in your glass is like a miniature oasis that you're just imagining because of how dry your throat is.
Yeah, I think
is it a glass of sand?
That's my issue then. I thought I didn't realize I needed to get liquid water. I thought this was the powdered stuff.
That's where you went wrong there. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you gotta dissolve the powdered stuff in water to shed it back into water.
See. Yeah, they don't mention that when they come to your school and sell it.
No.
Aquatic Denny has a question in chat. Says, if you spin in circles too fast, do you fly away? And
no, you drill down.
You drill. Ah, yeah, that makes sense. What if you think it depends on the hat? I feel like if you were wearing maybe like a wide brimmed hat, you might have a chance. Although, aerodynamics that might push you down.
Possibly. If you have really baggy sort of wizard style sleeves, then maybe that would give you the lift.
Okay. Yeah. So it's one or the other. I mean, you're either rocketing off or you're going straight down.
I mean, if you spin very fast on your head, I assume that it works in reverse and you do take off, yes.
Yeah. Well, we can test that because that's a thing people do.
Yes, no, it's a real problem in the breakdancer community. A lot of breakdancers are lost to inadvertently taking off without a parachute.
Yeah, I remember my last flight out to Los Angeles. We had a delay because there were they said it was turbulence, but it was really just breakdancers hitting the bottom of the plane.
Turbulence was the breakdancer's street name.
That's true. It was a little turbulence.
Yeah.
Here's the actual question that I had.
Sorry for deriding that several times there.
I don't think anyone could possibly derail my train of thought as much as I managed to do myself. I can't let anyone claim that honor. Here's what it was. So what do you think the trade-off is? So just as a premise, you do monthly uploads. Every month you do a very sort of like high production value video, and then the rest of the month is, well, obviously it's spent in not uploading a video.
Yes, it's been working on the next video. Yeah,
right. Yeah, that sounds better than what I said. Yeah. yeah, I spent a month in not uploading a video.
Then I make my highly polished video in sort of the weekend before I upload, and then take a month off again.
So I guess question, if it even is a question, but like, what do you think is the trade-off, or like the mental process or difference between like doing that and then like doing what a lot of us do, which is like weekly songs? Like where do you find the sort of the sweet spot where it's like, okay, I'm spending a month on this, so it's got to be quality, but then you don't like drive yourself crazy with it?
It's tough. I mean, I've always enjoyed big projects. I've always preferred working on larger scale things than doing lots of small things. The trade-off is just in the ability to jump on trends and be current. Because even my videos like take more than a month to make. I release them monthly, but I'm always working on two or three at a time. So from like initial idea to completion, it's normally 3 months minimum. If I'm lucky, like 2 months, but typically from idea to finished product being released, it's 3 to 4 months. So I'm always working very far ahead. I've got my videos for the rest of the year. Like my next two or three are locked in, and for the rest of the year are all sort of semi-locked in. Unless some real massive trend happens, I'd have to completely course correct to try and get something in. But it's a real trade-off on just being able to do things, drop of a hat. Oh, this game is suddenly Among Us was a prime example of that. Among Us came out of nowhere and suddenly went from being a little game no one had heard of to the biggest game on the planet in the space of about 3 weeks. And yeah. I knew I had to do something for it, and it was a real, real challenge to completely rework my schedule. Push videos back. I'm working on a video now that would have been out last year had Among Us not happened.
Wow.
To completely rework the schedule to be able to get an Among Us track done. And even then, it was like a couple of months after the Among Us thing was at its peak. So that's the trade-off. And I do envy the ability to suddenly go, yeah, I'm gonna do this week and just make it and have it be a finished thing. And it must be very nice. But equally, I do enjoy really hunkering down for a month on the minutiae of a complex video edit.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I think like you end up with the kind of like staying power and like replay value, you know, by making such a high quality product. Yeah. And that I guess it must be nerve-wracking to know that, like, you know, it's like the video has to do well because that's the one that there is, you know.
Yeah.
And I mean they do well because like they're high quality and people know that, and people know that they're going to be, like, people look forward to the next release, but yeah, at the same time I can definitely see why that's like such a
it does make choosing the topics for my videos kind of scary, because yeah. if it doesn't do well, then it's a lot of time to have lost on a video. And I've been very lucky that I've never really had a video completely flop. I had one last year, a Surgeon Simulator song that I did with Bone Cage that was its numbers are way lower than everything else I've done, and I'm not sure what it was about. It was a different musical style. I tried something a bit more rock and rolly. If it might have been just that the game wasn't anywhere near as popular as I was expecting, but that one's like the one standout I think I would think. Well, that song didn't do that well, but I've been quite lucky that pretty much everything's worked out so far.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
It's interesting to look at the numbers as well, because like you say, it's got the replay value. So when I look at my Spotify numbers versus other artists' Spotify numbers and my video numbers versus other artists' video numbers, is that often my videos will get a lot more views than other artists, but other artists will get a lot more on Spotify because there's more incentive to continue listening to the song on YouTube, whereas a lot of people who have a simpler lyric video, people will discover the song on YouTube, they'll listen once or twice, and then they'll put it on the Spotify playlist, and that'll be where they get most of their listen time from the track.
Yeah, it's only been this year that I've even sort of started taking like streaming seriously and like pushing that more. But I realized that like, yeah, a lot of people do, at least, I mean, especially with like kind of the side of nerdcore that I do, where it's kind of like anime, a lot of anime songs, AMVs. A lot of my stuff is, you know, just like simple lyric videos. People want to replay it, but like they'd rather play it on Spotify or Apple Music or something. I think it might have been Dan Bull who was talking about how like a lot of his stuff found like a lot more life on Spotify than YouTube.
Yeah, my songs do pretty well on Spotify, but the Spotify numbers are dwarfed by the YouTube numbers, and I think for a lot of artists it's the other way around.
Yeah, I mean, because I think I've said this before, but like the way that you do your music videos, it's really like it's a short film every time.
You know, I have a background in film and video. That was my career. I studied animation at university, and then after university, I worked for a decade in film and video, mostly in corporate film and video, which I managed to escape. And music was always a hobby. In fact, music wasn't even always a hobby. I was always writing lyrics. I wrote lyrics for the past sort of decade just as a hobby. I didn't record any of them until not long before I released Find the Keys.
Yeah,
which is like the song that got my channel going. So I always feel kind of insecure about that because I don't have, whilst I've got a good knowledge on how to make a music video, I'm completely bereft of knowledge on how to like mix and record music, and I depend a lot on other producers and people I work with to make my music sound good. I can write the lyrics and I can perform them, but I don't know the first thing about how to mix a song.
that's fair. I mean, everybody has like different strengths, and I like that's kind of another thing I've been seeing a lot of this year with different artists like who have been kind of coming up in nerdcore, and just seeing people like play to their strengths, like for instance, like Breton Boy is a good example. Like he doesn't produce, but like he doesn't make his videos, but he like he really plays to his strengths, and he writes and he performs some like really entertaining stuff. And like he's, you know, kind of discovered his pocket. Oh, Shrubbity has an interesting comment. He says, the one perk of releasing music weekly is that you learn a lot very quickly about mixing and producing because you're doing it so often. That's true.
That's a very good point. Yeah. I mean, my roadmap. I just said roadmap. Oh god, I feel like EA or something.
Oh no.
Oh god. My roadmap for the channel.
Let's talk about corporate synergy for a second.
So I'm in the process now of like moving house into a place with my partner, and she is a trained video editor in her own right. And the goal is, the plan is that within the next few months, she's going to come and work for me full time. So I have a full time assistant in pretty much all the runnings of the channel, which should hopefully increase the output. And the goal is basically to alternate between doing the big video that I'm currently known for, and between those to have one or two simpler, more akin to what other channels do, where it is more lyric video with gameplay and maybe a little bit of motion graphics. So people should get more songs, but just they won't all be as big. But it'll mean I'll have more time to experiment and hopefully learn some stuff myself, which is the goal.
Yeah, that's really exciting.
Yeah.
Falcon Key from chat has a related question. He says, what was the hardest thing to learn for either of you with mixing and producing?
As someone who has learned neither, I can do a very basic mix, and I'll often do a really simple mix before I send it to my producer just to say, well, this is kind of what I want it to sound like, but I want it to sound good. But I've put echoes on the bits I want to have echoes, and I've put sort of some filters on bits I want to have filters. So use that as a guide, and then do it all from scratch and make it good. That's about the limit of my mixing.
Yeah.
And I don't produce at all. So I'll hand over to you first.
That's one. It's funny because I just had, I think, what must be that exact same feeling, because I recently commissioned some artwork, and I wanted the artist to know, like, what the character looked like and sort of what the general setup was. I was like, here's a sketch that I've done, and you wouldn't even, like, I wouldn't put it on my fridge if a kid drew it. Like, it was...
I mean, but it was... as an artist who did used to, like, do art commissions, and that was a part of my living for a long while, you wouldn't believe how helpful it is. No matter how rough the sketch is, even if it's stick figures, just having that to work from is a huge help.
And that's what I've heard, which is why I do it, but it's, you know, it's always... It feels embarrassing to do, but it's, like, obviously that's why I'm commissioning artwork, is because I'm not... I'm not an artist, otherwise I would just do it. Which I think is similar with, like, you know, if you've got a producer, it's, like, really helpful, you know, if they've got a reference like that. I think the hardest thing for me to learn was, I'm still learning this, but, like, how to do good bass. Like, especially 808s, especially, like, really booming bass. When I started producing, which was out of pure necessity, because I had no idea where to get beats when I was younger, I eventually just stopped. Like, I tried to put bass and stuff, and it always came out muddy, and I didn't know why. And so I just, like, I just kept turning the bass down and down and down in every song that I did, and then eventually my stuff just had, like, no bass in it. And so it's just been, like, the past year that I've been, like, slowly kind of turning that back up and figuring out how to use, like, compression and sidechaining and EQ and, like, clipping properly to make a bass that can, like, really rattle, but, like, isn't, you know, doesn't just make the whole track muddy. And I mean, what people don't see is, like, all of the scrapped tracks that go by the wayside that are, like, you know, it's like, oh, this sounds like garbage. I'm just going to sweep that under the rug and no one will ever hear that. Which I think is probably...
I really want to learn to produce, and that's one of my goals once I've got my partner on board and taking on a share of the channel work to have, so I've got a bit more time, is to learn to produce, because I try and do a really... I try and, like, vary the style of music I do a lot. Mm-hmm. And for the more rap-centric stuff, it's very easy to find a pre-made beat. But when I wanted something that's more of a song, that has more melody to it, that has more of a musical theatre sort of leaning, it's very difficult to find a pre-made thing that suits that, so I've got to commission it, and I'd love to be at a point where I can do that myself from scratch. That's one of my goals for the next, let's say, year and a half, 2 years.
Yeah.
Is to get to a point where I can do that.
Well, and, you know, especially if you do, like, put out, you know, more stuff more often, like Schwabity was saying, like, if you're like, part of that is you're producing stuff, like, the quality will just, like, ramp up way faster than you even realize.
Fingers crossed.
It's always when you, like, you never, I don't know, at least for me, I never feel like I get better from, like, one song to the next, like, hardly ever. But then if I look back at my, like, last, like, 10 songs that I've done, I'm like, oh, okay, like, I'm on a different level. And I think that's, like, a common sentiment. I did have, actually, kind of a related thing I was wondering about. Because for me and, like, a lot of other nerdcore artists, I tend to see, like, when it comes to our influence, I tend to see a blend of, like, kind of popular rap, along with, like, I mean, for me, I have a lot of old school influence. Like I've said before, Biggie's, like, one of my, Biggie and Snoop are two of my biggest stylistic influences. And then also, like, there's a lot of, like, older nerdcore influence, kind of that first wave, you know, like Ran, Front, Whitey Cracker, like that kind of, like I said, like, first wave. A lot of times with your stuff, I get, like, Tom Lehrer vibes.
Oh, love Tom Lehrer. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when I think of my influences, I can't think of many rappers. I mean, there's a lot of rappers I enjoy, but they're not where I go for influence. The thing with my work is, with the video and the song are very much interwoven. I like to make it feel like a complete piece. I think it was Schwabity said on one of his reactions to one of my songs that, like, that my videos are like, they're a complete piece of entertainment. The song and the video go together hand in hand, and often I'll put things in the video that tie to the lyrics and things in the lyrics that tie to things I know I'm going to put in the video. So I want to make it... I've almost forgotten my original point now. I've gone on a sidetrack. Oh God, what was I saying? So yeah, I try and theme things to the game as much as possible. So I adapt the musical style to fit the game as much as possible in a way that sort of more musical theatre does with its adaptation. So a lot of my lyrical influences are people like Lin-Manuel Miranda and Tim Minchin and Stephen Sondheim. Like I look to them a lot more for lyrical influence than I do rappers. And then when I'm doing a particularly rappy track, I will hunker down and listen to some more rap and get some ideas. But my influences are definitely more on the musical theatre side of things than the hip-hop side of things.
Lucifer and Chat and Insane Ian are both very excited at the Tim Minchin.
I love Tim Minchin.
Yeah, I'm also a big Tim Minchin fan. Also, I guess people like Sammy J and Randy, just kind of like anything where it's like, I don't know, like comedy story song. That kind of what would you call that? Musical comedy?
Yeah, I'd say it's a musical comedy.
Yeah. What are some of your like favorite musicals then? Like you've mentioned like Lin-Manuel Miranda being one of your like favorite influences, but do you have just like favorite musicals in general that maybe aren't even like related to what you make?
That's a tough one. I like a lot of musicals. I watch a lot of musicals. I think Stephen Sondheim is the god of musical writing. Long may he reign. I love Sweeney Todd. I love Into the Woods. A lot of his, that's all the era, sort of 80s, 70s and 80s, Stephen Sondheim, a lot of great ones there. Of course, I love Hamilton. It's cliche to say, I think Hamilton's great. I like In the Heights a lot.
Yeah.
My favourite musical, I think, of all time, the ones I've seen on stage, probably is Tim Minchin's Groundhog Day.
Okay.
Groundhog Day is incredible. You haven't and you never will, because it flopped and it didn't last very long.
So sad.
They did a brief, like, two-week, no, one-month, like, no more than a month test run here in London. It did pretty well. They thought, right, it's done well enough, let's take it to Broadway. Had a big Broadway launch, and for some reason it just didn't gel on Broadway, and it closed after, like, 2 or 3 months. And they cancelled the West End run. So I'm really lucky to have got to see it in the brief window it was performing, and it was incredible. Can recommend looking up the soundtrack on Spotify.
I feel like Tim Minchin, I don't know, this is like pure speculation, but I just feel like Tim Minchin would do so much better on the West End than Broadway, because, I don't know, just American audiences are... There's a lot of Americans that do appreciate Tim Minchin, but I feel like it's less...
His Matilda has done very well on Broadway, so I guess they were banking on that.
Yeah, that's true, but yeah. I don't know.
It's interesting because Stephen Sondheim originally, probably about 20 years ago now, was commissioned to make a musical of Groundhog Day. And Stephen Sondheim, who I think is one of the greatest musical writers ever lived, pulled out, gave up and said, look, it can't be done. A good musical of Groundhog Day cannot work just because of the nature of the repetitive cycle of the story. And then Tim Minchin went and did it. And then Stephen Sondheim went and saw it and said, no, I'm wrong. I was wrong. He's written the perfect musical. So if Stephen Sondheim loves it, then I have to love it.
And I'll never get to see it. That's so sad. I'm now sad. I now miss something that I didn't know existed until a second ago. Very common with me.
The soundtrack is available. There might be some clips on YouTube.
Oh, well, I mean, I know what I'll be listening to on my my walk today, then. Brandboy06 has a question. So Stoops, do you play the full games before you make a song?
Oh gosh, I wish I could. No, I mean, again, the nature of, like I was saying earlier, the video is taking 3 to 4 months often to make, and wanting to be current means I'm planning them and writing the songs normally before the game has come out. They're thoroughly based on a lot of research, as much sort of press material as I can find. Occasionally, I'm lucky, and there's a game that's popular enough that it's already out to warrant doing a song. But typically, I don't get to play them before I write the song. If I do, it's certainly not to completion. It's a little bit. TF2 is a game I played relentlessly as a teenager till it almost made me fail college. So that one I played a lot of before I wrote the song. Other ones I played a little bit of, but I could probably count on one hand the number of songs on my channel that I have where I've played the game thoroughly to completion. It's mostly watching people's Let's Plays at 1.5 times speed so I can...
I understand that. Them. That's A while back, I did a paper Mario song with Connor Quest, and I played a little bit of classic Paper Mario, and then I watched just a lot of Let's Plays at 1.5 just to kind of figure out. And then I just ended up just doing a lot of paper puns. So
yeah. Puns are the easy day saver. You know, I've got enough to fill half the time. Puns will fill the rest.
yeah, exactly. Marty asks in the chat, question to Stoops, how is it like working with the Chalk Eaters?
It was great, yeah. I mean, it was brief. I only had a relatively small part vocally. I recorded it a long time before the song came out. I think I recorded it early last year. And then the video took a long time to make. But it was fun. They're really nice guys. I'm still talking to them now about other things. It was great. Interestingly, when I was brought on board to the project, I was the only guest on the song at that point. They hadn't managed to get Ellen McLean or Gabe Newell yet. So I did Gabe Newell's parts, the bits that the real Gabe Newell did originally. I did, and there are recordings of that. But then they managed to get Gabe Newell's to replace some of my parts with the actual Gabe Newell. So. It was good. It was a good experience. They're good guys. I've now actually working with them on they're one of their guys, Maisel, who composes for them, is now composing a track for me. So
amazing. Amazing. That was actually not an intentional pun, but it turned out to be. Horde Egg or Horde EG has a question. Do Stoops and Freest have any favorite musical artists? I imagine we do. What do they listen to on their free time? So like when you're not trying to, you know, stylistically get a reference for something. What do you just vibe with? What do you jam?
That's tough, because I have such an eclectic music taste. Spotify struggles to recommend me things. It doesn't know how to make a cohesive playlist for me because it's so all over the place. One of my favorite bands of all time is the Bare Naked Ladies. I know that's often considered like a middle-aged man band to like, but god damn it, I love the Bare Naked Ladies. I've seen them live like half a dozen times. They're great. Jimmy Eat World, my favourite band as a teenager, and I still hold a big soft spot for them. Love Jimmy Eat World. Those. If I had to pick my two favourite artists off the top of my head, probably be those.
Yeah,
In the rap sphere, I'm big into I quite like Hilltop Hoods and Illy. There's a lot of Australian rappers I like, actually. Now I think about it, I hadn't really pieced it together, but a lot of Australian rappers I like.
I was listening to a little bit of Australian rap, and I wish I could remember any of the artists' names, but I definitely love hearing different... Well, I love rap in other languages, but then also in just various different English accents. I mean, I've heard a lot of accented English. I don't know.
Yeah.
Dialects, English dialects. I've heard a lot of UK rap, because I listen to a lot of drill and grime. Obviously just I have a lot of friends in the UK that rap. But then also like I used to listen to a lot of Scottish rap. Scottish rap is definitely a very like very cool sound to me. I was going to ask before what's your TF2 main?
Oh, gosh. I also feel bad. I want to point out in the chat, a lot of people are saying jazz right now, and I forgot to say that about a third of everything I listen to is some form of classic jazz. So I didn't mention any of that, but also I like jazz. My TF2 main, I typically played ENG and Spy. Okay. I didn't play Spy well, I will add, but I liked playing Spy, ENG, and Sniper with the three I played the most.
That's fair. I have a similar thing where, so I used to play TF2, and now I play Overwatch, which I feel like is a natural progression for a lot of people, But I'm not good at Sombra, but I really like playing Sombra. So, you know, she's essentially the spy of Overwatch, I guess. Yeah. I didn't say what music I like. I too have a very eclectic musical taste. For me, let's see. My favorite band generally is Queen.
Queen classic.
But I haven't actually been listening to a lot of Queen lately, and I feel like my favorite band changes every once in a while, and I don't know if that's gonna happen again. But when I was younger, the first artist that I really really got into was Owl City.
I was big into Owl City for a while,
and then I got really into the Plain White Tees. And then it was Queen, and now I really like like Leonard Cohen and a lot of just old folk stuff. So if I'm just walking around just vibing, like I'm very likely listening to like Famous Blue Raincoat by Leonard Cohen. That's probably my biggest vibe song that I have.
Nice. I was big into Queen in my teens. I had my phase where I was going to be a rock star, and I had hair sort of nipple length long hair and leather jackets and a cheap Fender guitar, and me and my friends were all going to be rock stars, and listened to a lot of Queen in those days.
Have you ever heard a song called "Tell It to the Beer" by Gaz Brookfield?
I have not.
That is a great song for anyone who used to be in a band and wanted to be a rock star.
Oh, right.
I think they took it off Spotify, and I don't know why, but it's one of my favorite songs. everyone is asking for long hair pics.
If pictures of it exist, it's because I haven't found them and burned them yet. There's probably some somewhere, very old pictures.
Yeah, I went the opposite way. I had short hair when I was younger, and started growing out my hair in college, and halfway through college.
I miss my long hair. I do. If you look at like the early videos on my channel, you can see I had quite long hair, and I'd often like hairspray it so it was big up on end, because I basically wanted to look like Tim Minchin. I'd do the big Tim Minchin style hair. Loved that. But as my videos progressed and I began going heavier and heavier, I'm playing a character in these videos. The more neutral I looked, the more easy it was to look like a character.
Yeah.
So fair. Having like, I used to dye my hair like purple and have it long, and then it suddenly became, well, how do I play a smart businessman with long purple hair? It just became easier to stop dyeing it relatively sensibly now and then.
Yeah.
The only awkward thing I keep is the facial hair, because it's the brand. So.
Oh, you got it. You got it.
Yeah.
At some point, I don't remember when I decide, like the exact moment that I decided. Well, no, maybe I do. I'm trying to think of on when exactly I was like, yeah, I'm gonna have a mustache now, because I've had like facial hair for most of college, but it was always just like very short trimmed, like kind of scruff, just to provide a small relief from whatever else was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, was it? It was like just last year, year and a half ago. I don't remember. I just remember that at some point I went to like trim my facial hair, and I was just like, I'm just gonna leave the mustache. And then that was it. And since then, I mean, I've been known as Guy with Mustache. It's amazing how certain facial hair will become such a huge part of your identity so quickly.
I mean, it grows on you over time, you know.
Well, it does, doesn't it?
you're right. It's become intrinsic. It's in my logo now. I can never lose it unless I have a complete rebrand. So.
Yeah. You'll never be able to make that song where you're like, I can have my face with no handlebar.
Exactly, yeah, and it's more the pity, because I've had that song sitting in my demos folder for years now. I can't do anything with it. It's a nightmare.
Can't shift it. One of my favorite things you've ever done is the old-timey Nerdcore song.
Oh, really?
And so I mean this as a compliment, but you really seem to be from another age sometimes. So how much of that is like, how much of that is the stipendium character, and then how much of that is just kind of like the way the way you are?
I have a big longing for the early 20th century. Like that era, I love that era of history, and I think that I don't want to blow my own trumpet here, but I think if I was around then, I think I could have been big because I can do all of the, oh yes, it's the radio singing voice from the 1930s. I think I could have done well on the radio circuit back then.
Get this man in front of a megaphone.
I always liked that sort of very weird style of enunciation and delivery for singing, where it's very posh but jazzy at the same time. It's weird. I love it.
Do you know a song called Come Josephine in My Flying Machine?
I couldn't sing it off the top of my head, but I have heard it, yes.
Do you know a song called A Bird in a Gilded Cage?
Sounds familiar. It sounds familiar.
Okay. I know what we're going to do if we hang out. We're going to sing "Come Josephine" to My Flying Machine.
Fully dressed without a smile. That's a great one.
Or Yes, We Have No Bananas. That's mm-hmm. a classic as well.
I'm waiting for a game to come along that's set in that era where I can do a nerdcore song that is like a 1920s radio track.
That would be the best.
I want it to happen. Just waiting for the right game.
I also love that. I'm a big fan of the megaphone singing era as well. Just that specific thing is like, you had kind of had some technology, but not enough to. When I was 16, 17, I ended up in a small production of it was an adaptation of Extricating Young Gussie by P.G. Wodehouse,
right?
Which, for people who don't know, P.G. Wodehouse was a British comedy writer, I guess you'd say. Yeah, mostly comedy. Yeah. He wrote Jeeves and Wooster. That's probably his most famous property. Mm-hmm. He also wrote a lot of short stories. Highly prolific. One of my favorite writers of all time. But if you ever hear, like, I don't know, I think he is the reason why Jeeves is like the name for like a posh like butler.
Oh yeah, he set the benchmark.
Yeah. So if you've ever heard of like Ask Jeeves, although even Ask Jeeves is an outdated reference now.
Yeah.
But if you have, that's where that comes from. But I was in this production of Extricating Young Gussie. And I got to play a young Gussie, not Gussie Finknoddle, but a different Gussie. That was Bertie Wooster's cousin. Hearing myself say Bertie Wooster in my American accent is challenging. I don't like the way that sounds.
Bertie Wooster.
Thank you. Thank you. That's much better. And that when they did the TV show with Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie, which I watched so much growing up, I remember the American accents just being atrocious, but it being one of the funniest things whenever somebody would come on screen and be like, Bertie Wooster. but now that's what it sounds like to me when I say it. yeah, but no, I was set, you know, back in those times, and so I got my character did a couple like vaudeville numbers, and so I sang, mm-hmm. I sang "Come Josephine" to My Flying Machine, and I sang "A Bird in a Gilded Cage," and so I've just had those songs stuck in my head since then. Like I still know them. "Come Josephine" to My Flying Machine, I think, is my favorite from that era, aside from "Yes, We Have No Bananas."
I mean, they're all classics. They are all classics, and now I want to go and listen to them.
Damn. Yeah.
Well, I'm doing after the stream. You'll be listening to Groundhog Day, and I'll be listening to "Come Josephine" in My Flying Machine.
Yes. I wonder when that would have been recorded. And I mean, yeah, I'm sure there is a recording of someone from when it was written singing it. I always think it's fun when you see those videos of like people trying to record modern music on like old wax cylinders and stuff. I mostly think of Rob Scallon doing that. where he got his metal band together and they recorded onto a wax cylinder.
Did it sound any good at the end?
The thing is, when you look at the groove that it cut, it was so deep because of the sheer volume.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what you want in a wax cylinder. You want a lot of volume because it picks it up better. But the vocalist definitely was at a disadvantage because...
Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, that's a big part of the reason why that early 20th century style of singing is very much up here, it's all very high and whiny. It's because it picked up better on old recording equipment. You just lost all the bass frequencies.
So exactly.
All the vocals had to cut through and be very, very up in the back of your throat.
And it's, yeah, that's, like I said, I love that style too. I actually really like old radio dramas. Even more so than old music. So you get kind of a hybrid of that in old radio dramas, because my favorite is The Shadow, which for a while Orson Welles actually played the title character.
Oh, really?
There were a few different ones, and I'm trying to remember which one it was, because it kind of evolved. Like, when it was early, when it was like in the 30s and they were doing it, The Shadow had a much more high-pitched nasal voice. And he was just like, who knows what evil lurks in the hearts of men? And then, like, over time...
Yes.
Over time, it became like, The Shadow knows. And that was like, it was like, so you got to see the voice evolve as the technology and, like, broadcasting equipment evolved. They were able to do, like, a lower voice. At least that's what I think it was. But, yeah. Oh, that show was great because, and all those old radio dramas, because they always they always over-explain everything.
Yes.
And they like saying the word "now" at the ends of sentences, like when they're performing an act. So it's like Dr. Wilson, you will fall under my trance now. Or it's like, I see him raising the weapon. He is pointing it at her. Now. Always
I mean,
now.
How is a listener supposed to know when, if not directly told the exact moment?
And if not now.
My favorite thing from back then, because Dan Bull and I just released a track, a little Nightmares track that heavily samples old radio.
Yes, yeah.
So, you watched it on stream. So we trawled through a lot of old archive audio, both commercials and radio dramas. And my favourite thing from back then I found that I want to reclaim is the use of the word "fine" as a strong positive as opposed to a neutral.
Yes.
Like someone, Daddy, look at this thing I drew at school. Why, that's fine, dear. That's just fine. As it means it's great. It's fantastic. I love that. And I want to use it more. Now fine just means, it's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Let me tell you a sentence that I have said before in my life, I think 4 or 5 times to different people. I've said that one of my goals in life is to have enough money to hire just a guy to follow me around and react to things that I do by saying, well, that's fine, fine. I've said that exact sentence to 4 or 5 different people in my life because I'm so on board with it. I like fine, and I also really like but good.
Mm.
Like, wow, say, we'd better get out of here, but good.
That's what you have not heard that one in a while. That's another good one.
There's so much old-timey slang that just really, really needs to come back. You know, there's a lot of stuff that we've stopped saying, rightly so, because we realize like, oh, that has a very, you know, not the best connotation. We should definitely exclude that from our vocabulary. But why not, instead of coming up with new phrases, why not bring back some of the old ones, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a lot that's out there that people just don't say anymore. One that I say occasionally is I refer to things as keen. It's a little bit more recent. Peachy keen, for sure. But I just like saying, that's keen.
That's nice. I like that. Yeah. That's in the same sort of ilk as fine. Yeah, it's a nice it's a nice word.
Fine is, I feel like, a little bit older. And then say that's keen. It's something you would say about like a like if you built like a soapbox derby car.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Have you seen Bill's racer? Say that's keen. It's versatile.
That's a mighty keen racer you built there. Yeah, that's nice. In the chat are saying the word croquembouche, and I don't know why, but it's one of my favorite words. So I'm going to take the opportunity to say croquembouche.
Croquembouche.
Croquembouche. Croquembouche. It's a beautiful word.
Yeah, I'm surprised that, like, we got through this much of the podcast without just, like, kind of devolving into 1930s speak, because...
Well, there's time left, Sonny, don't you worry about that. We'll get there, you'll see.
Don't go anywhere, keep that radio dial tuned to twitch.tv/
With your host, Priest, and me, the Stupendium, we will be here until the hour is up.
Today's episode of the Breck Freest Club is sponsored by Blue Coal. Blue Coal, for all your home heating needs. Be sure to talk to your local Blue Coal dealer today. Blue Coal, the thinking man's coal.
Say, is that some of that blue coal?
Why, it sure is, Dolores.
Made out of the finest anthracite, and with a noticeable blue tinge, you can find it in your local, what would they say, your local store, your local...
Your local blue coal purveyor.
Purveyor is good, yeah. is this me taking one... Supermarket is good, do they have supermarkets? At that time, I don't know that supermarkets really existed.
Supermarkets didn't exist till sort of the 60s, I think. That's a 60s, 70s thing. We're about 30 years, 40 years too early for that.
Shops wouldn't be what you'd say in sort of a transatlantic American accent. Mm. Would say shops. Gosh, this is just me taking one step closer to my lifelong dream of writing and recording an old-timey radio drama. I mean, I'll be honest, I've written it.
If you need anyone, I'm in.
You'll be surprised at how fast I can write a script. It'll seem suspiciously like I've just had it lying around.
Hmm. You did pull that blue coal thing out of the air very, very conveniently.
Well, to be fair, the blue coal was the main advertiser for The Shadow, which... That is my, as I said, my favorite radio drama. So every single episode would have a blue coal ad, or a few. Gosh, there's so much good, just quotable stuff from The Shadow, like "the weed of crime bears bitter fruit." So that's a good one.
I love that sort of writing. I would love to hear a script. If you can churn one out, I will gladly read it.
I mean, now I know what I'm doing today after I listened to Minchin and.
Perfect. Well, we've planned out your whole itinerary for the day.
I love it. That's why I do this podcast, is just so that I can get my schedule in order. Ah, I can't believe you've been going for over an hour. This show has a time limit, and I still want to do one more thing before we end it. So I feel like I'm legally required, not legally, but I did want to.
It's the season finale, so you can have it be a feature length special.
It's true. I got to bring back an old standby classic of the show. I mean, when I started, I would do like five or six of these every week, and then it kind of boiled, like, so I kind of simmered down to doing like just a couple, and then some weeks not even doing them. So what I've got is a randomly generated would you rather conversation starter question from the internet. Mm-hmm. Here's a list of ones that I'm not going to use. These were also really randomly generated. So here's some that I thought were just boring. This one says, would you rather watch movies alone or eat dinner alone? That just sounds sad. Here's one that just says, this one says, would you rather have $250? And that's the end of the question. Actually, it says, would you rather receive a guaranteed $250?
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it goes. That's the end of it.
Oh, well, yes, then I would.
I would, thanks. There's a lot that just don't make any sense whatsoever. But here's one that makes a little bit of sense that I thought was funny.
Okay.
Would you rather be stuck in a room with a cranky old man or be stuck in a room with a cranky toddler?
Oh, cranky old man every time.
Right? I've got no argument like there. It's absolutely.
Yeah. I have no responsibility over a cranky old man. He's self-sufficient. We just have to endure each other throughout the room. A toddler clearly needs caring for in some capacity. And then I'm assuming they're not my toddler in the scenario. So, you know, I don't want to be looking up to someone else's cranky child. But a cranky old man, I'm basically a cranky old man myself. I feel we'd get on fine. We'd sit there miserably and just in sort of silent acceptance of the scenario.
You'd
and
have
occasionally grumble in unison.
The same favorite songs. The same favorite radio stations, all the hits,
all the hits. Yeah.
What does chat think? Cranky old man or cranky young toddler? Lucifer says like the old men Muppets. So yeah, like that.
Saturn Moldoff. Yeah, I mean they are basically my peak aesthetic.
Yeah. If it was specifically them, like bring them both on. 100%. Noise Pride says no. Cranky toddlers are so funny. To me, there's the duty of care kind of is what offsets that. They can be funny, but I'm always worried. Like I'm always worried about like upsetting anyone. And a toddler, I feel like it's much harder for me to figure out what's gone wrong in that scenario.
Yeah. Very much so.
It's much harder to have kind of a heart to heart. You know, kind of a. Why don't we each write down a list of things we appreciate about the other and then come back and compare lists? You can't do that with a toddler. Cosmos Skumple or Zoe says, as someone with a lot of younger siblings, I'm Team Toddler. Team Toddler I didn't think was as good as the original Team Titans.
Yeah, no, not me neither.
Oh my goodness, Crystal Calico, thank you for those bits.
Hey.
That's my would you rather. I feel like we're safely on the same side of that. I think so.
There's not much debate to happen there.
No, there's cranky old men are one of the last few pure joys of society. And they should be treasured.
They're great. I can't wait to be one. I'm not far off.
What is your ideal like aesthetic for when you're older? I'll share mine quickly so you know what I mean. I have said for years that the second I turn 60, I am moving out into the middle of the woods, perhaps on a mountain, and I'm becoming a wizard.
Okay. I think mine is I want to be that old guy that you see in the city and you look at them and go, they've had a cool life. I want to be going around in a brightly coloured suit with a big wide brimmed hat and crazy massive wild white hair and a cane and just look basically I want to look a little bit pimpy. Uh-huh. You know, I just want to look like a really cool old guy. People look at him and go, he did something interesting with his life. He's a cool guy.
That is admirable. I realized that earlier I did neglect to read. Stargirl had asked if she missed the where is it? Did I miss the obscure Pride and Prejudice lore quizzing? You did not. We didn't bring up Pride and Prejudice, but just for you, Stargirl, I will ask Stoops a piece of Pride and Prejudice trivia.
I don't accept prejudice in my Pride Month. Sorry.
Pride or Prejudice, pick. It's time to choose.
Oh god.
Okay, here's some easy or some base level Pride and Prejudice trivia. What is Mr. Darcy's first name?
I've never read it. I'm going to go with Dylan, because alliteration is fun.
Dylan Darcy. That's correct. Some would have said Fitzwilliam. They would have been wrong. It's now Dylan. And there's
it's now Dylan.
There's no changing
that. If it's not right, then it's definitely a Marvel character somewhere.
Yeah, played, of course, by the illustrious Dylan Firth in the 1995 BBC series. Well, that's where we got to cap this one, and I hate to do it, but you know, it's got to. There has to, time being what it is, has to be segmented at certain points so that we know, you know, which bit of it we're currently in. So wrapping up here, Stoops, where can people find you around? I mean, where are they, what do you got going on? What should people look forward to?
Oh gosh. You could find me on youtube.com/thestupendium. I'm moving house in like roughly a month's time. I have one more, hopefully, if I get it done in time, sort of big production video due out before then. Then I'm taking a couple of months out, but I've got some smaller projects that I'm getting done now to sort of have banked to release over those couple of months whilst I move and get set up. And then I'll come back with some exciting stuff for later in this year that I've got planned. So stay tuned for those. But I'm on everything. I'm on all the things except Instagram. Pretty much.
You're even on TikTok, I noticed.
I'm on TikTok. I went viral there by accident last year, and now I'm a TikTok person, apparently. So that happened. I don't TikTok enough. I keep having ideas for TikToks and then not finding time to do them.
Yeah, TikTok is very very fickle with how they'll either reward you for staying away for a long time or for posting every day, or sometimes just they won't do anything with you. There's no knowing. There is no knowing. As for me, I'm Freest. My username is different on pretty much everything, because that's kind of the life that I like to live. So I'm on Twitter at @MeFreest. That's where you can mostly find me. YouTube.com/Freest. On TikTok, I'm just Freest. On Instagram, I'm Freest Raps. And I also have a Discord. But for anyone in chat, I did the wrong thing. Hold on, I can't type. There we go. And I also have a Discord community that is pretty hip and poppin', I've noticed.
It's certainly poppin' and hip. I've noticed both of those. The poppin' quotient is off the chain.
The poppin' quotient is off the chain. I'm putting that on the back of my novel, and I'm going to attribute it to you.
You need a little more work on the hip. The hip levels, you know, drop in a little, but the popping quotient, oh boy.
I need a hip replacement. I at present, I am only tragically hip, and I could be a better Canadian band. That's a lie. There is no better Canadian band. Thank you for.
I'm sorry.
Thank you for listening to the Breakfast Club, everybody. Stoops, thank you so much for hanging out.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute delight, and I hope to see you on every podcast now.
Oh, well, I look forward to doing more.
And I think everybody in the chat is saying the same thing.
So,
yes, thank you very much, everyone, for listening. It's been the Breakfast Club. I've been Freest. That over there is the Stupendium. And, well, see ya when I see ya. Take care.
Oh.